Today's broadcast is brought to you by ClassicBaseballBroadcasts.com, your one-stop destination for thousands of authentic, vintage radio game broadcasts, interviews and highlights, Red Barber, Mel Allen, Vin Scully, Ernie Harwell, Kurt Godey, are just a few of the Ford Frick Award-winning voices. There are hundreds more that will bring back childhood memories from back in the day when the game was always on. From the crack of the bat, to the roar of the crowd, relive the moments that made Baseball America's favorite pastime. Get started for free and step back in time listening to baseball's greatest moments.
Bob received many All-Star and World Series assignments during his illustrious career as a reward for being among the best of his time. Here he is at the All-Star game in 1935, and we follow up with an All-Star moment of 1938, a bizarre one, featuring Leo Durocher in Cincinnati. Let's listen first to Jimmy Fox at bat in the 1935 All-Star game in Cleveland.
A man on first with two outs. Walker draws his arms up in front of him. Watching the man on first base. Now he's ready. Here's the next pitch to Fox. It's outside. A fastball at the knee. Makes it ball two and strike one. Two and one. Pepper Martin third. Hockey Vaughn short. Billy Herman second. Terry at first. That's the National League infield. Walker's getting his sign again. Here's the next pitch. It's a slow ball and a beauty. Gee, that was a nice one right in there. And the count is ball two and strike two. Walker threw a slow ball into Jimmy Fox, and it was a beauty. Just came in below the shoulders, right over the plate. It's a called strike, and the count is two and two. Runner on first base is taking a short lead off. He's ready again. Here's the next pitch. It was a slow curve outside below the knee, and it's ball three. Makes it three and two now. Man on first with two out, three and two on the batter. Now Gehrig will break for second base with the pitch. Three and two on the batter and two gone. Gehrig on first base. Watch him now. Walker's getting ready. He throws the ball over to first base trying to pick Gehrig off, but he's back in the bag safely. Lou didn't have a very long lead off, and he just leads back onto the bag. Walker pulls at the peak of his cap, gets ready out there again. He has a three and two count on Fox. Gehrig is edging off the bag. There he goes. Here's the pitch. And the batter is gone. Hit a home run over Medwick's head into the stands in left field, out there where the marker says about 385 feet. Jimmy Fox just hit a home run over the left field fence into the lower grandstand out there in left center field, and it scored two runs, put the American League in the lead by a score of 2-0, and believe me, that was some wallop.
That is hit number five for the National League. McCormick's first hit. He popped out, bounced out, and singled to center field. Now the next man to come up is the shortstop, Durocher. Lippy bounced out the first time and struck out the second time. He's facing Grove now with a man on first. A bunt down the third baseline. Fox is coming in fast. He's up with it. There's the throw. Whoop! He threw the ball away. There was nobody covering. There was nobody covering first base. And McCormick is coming all the way around to third. Durocher is going all the way. McCormick comes all the way to the plate, and Durocher goes to third. Here's a wild throw to the plate, and Durocher scores. A wild throw to the plate, and Durocher scores. Two more runs are in for the National League, and they lead 4-0 on that bunt. There was nobody over to cover first base. The bunt was fielded by Fox. Fox threw the ball to first base while Gehringer was shifting over to cover but wasn't there. The man on first base, McCormick, went all the way around and scored. And the third baseman threw the ball past first base into right field. Before the ball was recovered, Durocher was around to third. There was a wild throw to the plate that went up against the railing, and Durocher scored. Now we'll have all the errors for you. In just a second, we have to wait to get it from the official score. We don't do any guessing on these broadcasts. Here's a right-hand hitter up, Mace Brown, and it's a curveball around his knees for a strike. The score is 4-0 now, in favor of the National League. There'll be two errors on the play, that much is sure. Now to wind up in the next pitch. It's a slow curve, a little bit too close, the ball. National League leads in the last half of the seventh inning, 4-0. That was a wild play there. American Leaguers talk it up out there in the infield. Mace Brown, the pitcher, is up. There's a swing and a miss right around his knees. He swung hard and missed it. Everybody in the press box is waiting for word here from the official score. A sacrifice hit for the batter, DeRocher. An error for Fox and an error for DiMaggio. As we told you, there were two errors on the play. Strike three struck him out. A curveball right around his knee. He struck out. Mace Brown struck out. Fox gets an error for the throw to first. The ball hit against the railing and bounced into right field. DiMaggio made a bad throw to the plate, and he gets an error. So there's the play for you. A sacrifice for DeRocher. Two errors, and two runs are in. The score is 4-0 in favor of the National League. Here's Hackup, the leadoff man.
One of the most infamous moments in not only World Series history, but in all of baseball history occurred in 1941 in Game 4 in the ninth inning at Brooklyn. At the mic, Bob Elson, being assigned that position by the Mutual Broadcasting System. Let's listen to how he called the never-to-be-forgotten passed ball by Mickey Owen.
Mr. Casey gets by Henrik, the ball game will be over, and the Dodgers will have even up the series at two games apiece. Remember, the fifth game of the World Series tomorrow in Gillette's broadcast. It'll be on the air tomorrow at 1:15 Eastern Standard Time. The game started later today because of Sunday. But tomorrow, Gillette will bring you the number five game of the World Series. It'll be on the air at 1:15 Eastern Standard Time. Well, here is Tommy Henrik up. It's two out. Two out in the first half of the ninth inning. Henrik has been up four times, flied out first time, flied out the second time, hit with a pitch ball the third time, popped out the fourth time. Ball, it's high. Henrik has had two hits so far in the series. He's up in there, the first pitch wide. There's two out and nobody on. It's the ninth inning at Brooklyn. Pitcher's getting all set out there again. Watch it. Here it is. It's a strike. It's right across his knees. Boy, that was a beauty. Casey threw in a half-speed pitch that time that was right in around his knees, and it's 1-1. Casey starts his windup out there again. Here's the next pitch to Henrik, and it's a strike. It's perfect. Right across his knees. It's called, and it's ball one and strike two on Henrik. Casey, the man of the hour, pitching for Brooklyn in the ninth. Changing fortunes of baseball. Here he is out there again. The next pitch, he swings and just tops the ball and rolls it foul on the ground to the left of the plate. And it's ball one and strike two in the batter. Higbee, French, Allen, and Casey went to the firing line for Brooklyn. Donald, Brewer, and Murphy went to the firing line for the Yankees. We saw seven pitchers in the ballgame. Two out here for the Yankees in the ninth inning. Here comes the next pitch. It's a ball wide, way outside, and it's ball two and strike two for Henrik. Dodger outfield playing him straight away and plenty deep. Right fielder Walker is right out in front of that scoreboard. Ball two, strike two for Henrik. Casey starting his windup again. Here comes the next pitch. It's a ball. It just missed the corner. Waist high, not by more than an inch. Maybe was that close. So again, we've come up to a 3-2 pitch. Two out in the ninth inning. Casey gets by Henrik. It's all over. If you're starting his windup out there again, he's all ready now. Watch it. Here it comes. He swung, fouled the ball. He swung at the ball and missed it. The ball gets away from the catcher, and Henrik goes to first. And now let's see whether the umpire is going to decide he fouled it or whether it was a clean strike. The umpire says that Henrik swung. It was a clean strike. The ball got away from the catcher, and so Henrik is entitled to first because he got there ahead of the throw. You never can tell on a swing like that whether it's a foul or not until the umpire rules on it. He swung at that pitch. He missed it cleanly and is on first base. It's an error for the catcher. Owen is charged with an error.
first base and brings up DiMaggio. Here's the pitch. It's wide and low for a ball. Joe DiMaggio batting. Man on first base. Fortune still smiling here in this ninth inning on the Yankees. After the first two men came up and went down, Kenrich gets the first base on a last strike, which Owen missed. Owen is charged with an error, and the batter, Henrik, is on first.
The Dodgers still led in this game 3-2 with Tommy Henrik at first base, two outs, top half of the ninth inning. The next four batters in the Yankee lineup were Joe DiMaggio, Charlie King Kong Keller, Bill Dickey, and Joe Gordon, and they all batted. DiMaggio followed with a single. Keller shot the Yankees ahead with a two-run double. And after a walk to Bill Dickey, Joe Gordon quieted the Dodger faithful with another two-run double. Suddenly and shockingly, the Yankees led 7-4, the score by which they won. So, a 7-4 victory by the Yankees gave them a 3-1 lead in the series, and they went on the next day to defeat the Dodgers by the score of 3-1 and win the series 4-1. What a development, what a memory that will always live in baseball history. Minnie Minoso hit a grand slam homer for the Chicago White Sox at Washington in the second inning of a game played on May 3rd, 1954. Here's Bob Elson to describe.
And here's Minoso. He walked the first time up. Pitcher getting all ready. Maury McDermott. First pitch is a little bit too low for a ball. McDermott, the victim of high schoolish errors here. And that's the way Washington has been playing, I gather, from what the boys have been writing in the newspapers here that we've been reading since we got here, that they've just been throwing the ball all over the place. And they're certainly giving evidence of it here tonight. That's a ball. It's outside for ball two. One run is scored. Bill Wilson is in. Bob Wilson's on third, Chico on second, Fox in first with one away, and the White Sox have a one-run lead. There's McDermott getting ready again. Alonso takes a ball. It's close above the knee, and here's the pitcher coming in and howling at the umpire now. McDermott is probably more upset by what the infielders have been doing behind him than he is by the umpire's call. And if he gets another one off the strike zone, he will force in a run. 3-0 count. Here's the pitch to Minnie. Strike call. At the end of three innings in the American League, Cleveland won and Philadelphia nothing. The outfield is straight away, fairly deep. Right fielder Minoso in the batter's box. Bases loaded. Sox are leading 1-0 in Washington. As he goes into the motion and fires, here's a foul that's up into the upper deck behind first. And it's another full count. 3-2. In the ball game tomorrow night, it's going to be Porterfield. And in the final game Thursday afternoon, we are expecting Marrero. He was supposed to pitch against the Indians here last night, but they had a deluge here. Ball three and a strike two count on Minoso. He set the fire. Here's a swing and a long drive. Way back, back, back. It's a grand slam home run at Dublin. Was a grand slam home run. A Coca-Cola wallet and a case of Coca-Cola for Orestes Minoso, who just hit a home run with the bases loaded at Washington, and the White Sox are leading 5-0. Shaw hit one. It had to go 420 feet to get up in those stands. And he hit it way up in there for a grand slam homer at Washington. Boy, that was sound close.
October 2nd, 1954. Bob Elson hosts a post-game show after the World Series with guests Bertie Tebbets and Marty Marion. Let's listen.
Hello, baseball fans everywhere. This is Bob Elson again, sitting in for Bill Stern. Well, it's all over for the shouting, and the Giants are new World Baseball champions. It's been a thrilling series, one that baseball will be talking about for a long time to come. And right now, we're going to get the professional opinions of managers Bertie Tebbets of the Cincinnati Redlegs and Marty Marion of the Chicago White Sox on how this year's World Series looks through the eyes of a big league manager. First, we want to send our good wishes and congratulations to manager DeRocher and the New York Giants. And we've heard the jubilation in the Giants clubhouse. Bertie, I'm wondering, and perhaps the fans are too, what the feeling must be like in the clubhouse of a loser that has just lost the World Series in four straight games.
Well, I went through that in 1940. We didn't lose in four straight games, but it's just a feeling of loneliness and frustration and the feeling that you'll do it next year. It's just something that's indescribable. It's a great letdown because the World Series is a great thrill.
Marty, have you expressed that? Have you been on the losing team in the World Series?
Yes, Bob, one time back in 1943 when the Yankees beat us. That was the only time. But it's just like Bertie says, it's a great letdown. Everybody's shaking hands with everybody and says, hello, boys, and goodbye this way, and I'll see you next spring. That's about it.
Well, that's one thing about baseball, any sport. It's part of the game. There has to be a winner, and there has to be a loser. And to be a gracious loser is just as important as winning, as long as you're going to have to lose. Now, the Giants really won this series, and they won it emphatically. Bertie, what did you think of the game today?
Well, I thought it was quite a ball game from the point of view of excitement, and as I have said all the way along the line, Giant pitching staff will grind it out. They've got the starters. If they don't have the starters, they have the relievers. They still had Grissom left in that bullpen, Bob.
Little pitched a real good ball, and of course, Antonelli coming in the eighth and the ninth, and he got them out of there when it looked like they might be able to break through.
He did a great job. He just did the kind of a job he's been doing all year.
What's the game?
Well, today, with the score 7-0, Cleveland coming back and trying to make a bid. The game was certainly a little excitement to the series. Cleveland throughout the series just didn't have what it took. The Giants had a great series throughout. The pitching, the defense was great. The hitting, the running, everything was great. The Giants had a great ball club and deserved to win.
What about the pitching of the New York Giants against this Cleveland ball club in the entire series? They had something that I think stood out. Effectiveness of their right-hand pitchers against the Cleveland left-hand hitters.
Well, it was the story of one man on the Cleveland ball club, Vic Woods, doing all the hitting, and we know in the National League that Gomez with his screwball and Antonelli and Little can take care of the left-handed hitters. And I think that the failure of the right-handed hitters on the Cleveland ball club to get hot was the difference between the series.
What are your plans now, Bertie?
I'm going to take my wife, and we're going away for a 10-day vacation trip, and I'm going back to work.
What are your plans, Marty?
Well, Bob, I'm going out to Oregon on a fishing trip for about 2 weeks, and back to South Dakota for a little pheasant hunting, and back home and work.
Would you like to just say a word, Bertie, about this? It's almost hard to pick out one or two players, because I think we're pleased that this four-game win for the New York Giants was a team victory. Were there any three or four of the players that you would like to just comment on in closing?
Well, I think Dusty Rhodes did a fabulous job, and I think that what maybe we're overlooking is the fact that Leo DeRocher took Dusty Rhodes for the spot that he needed him the most. As a matter of fact, he didn't use Rhodes today, which I thought was a very fine managerial position to place himself in, because if this game ever did get tied up, he always had Rhodes for that hot spot.
What about Cleveland? They're just in closing, Marty.
Back to Elton, you took oil to them.
Yes, I was, but I thought they could win. Bob, about the only bright spot that Cleveland had throughout the entire series was Vic Wirtz at first base. He did a terrific job, especially with his big bat. I'm sure that Lopez did the best that he could. The boy gets up the
Well, thank you both very, very much. And friends, that's it. And you, my name is Bob Elton. It's been a real pleasure. For Bill Stern on today's All-State Show.
I don't believe that I have to tell you the quality of the last part of that interview by Bob Elson was somewhat less than perfect. However, it was requested by several of our Bob Elson fans, including his daughter, and so we left it on there especially for them. Let's move on now to August 11th, 1962, in Chicago. The White Sox are hosting Kansas City. Bob Elson and Milo Hamilton are on the mic. Let's listen to a small portion of this ball game and pay attention to Bob Elson's dialogue on Dizzy Dean.
Stephen has it. He's going to flip to the pitcher. They get Fox on the play. Landis moves to third. Trent man to bat of the inning. Cunningham doubled off Rocco. To start this fourth inning, he scored our first run, the tightest since then we've added. Five more and lead 6-1. Well, Aparicio seems to be all right down there in the dugout. He has his glove ready to go up the steps and out when this inning is over. Before the way he was rolling and the way Foxy had to get him to be quiet, I thought he might have really been hurt. There's a ball inside, and it's 2-0 to Cunningham. Landis with a short lead at third. Now he edges up the line as the left-hander starts his windup. And here's the pitch to Cunningham. There's a swing. There's a fly ball down the left side. It may go down into the corner. It is off the top of the fence. Here is Cunningham racing around second. On his way to third. Here's the throw coming in now. And it's a stand-up triple high off the wall in left field. Cunningham gets his second hit in a row. Landis could have called in from third, of course, with a three-bagger. There's a triple for Cunningham. Hit number two off Archer. As he sliced that ball right down the left field line, and hit right at the top of the wall for the 353 time. The only concern when we watched the ball, as we're right in line with the third base line, was he going to slice that ball and serve it foul? But it was fair by about 6 feet. And here is Robinson, 11th man to bat in the inning. Strikes and it's called. Sox now scored 7 runs on 5 hits.
I was listening to Dizzy Dean all afternoon and caught a few laughs. He's a very, very funny man. Here is a swing and a miss. He struck him out. That is the first strikeout for Bizarre. You know, occasionally we all make references to this or that. You just can't keep your nose to the grindstone, keep talking about the game all the time. You hear us mention the friends, or we get a wire from somebody and so on. Sort of breaks it up because, here's the game, 8-1. We just keep your nose to the grindstone and call every pitch. It gets sort of monotonous, and you break it up by doing other things and talking about other things, figuring that maybe the people listening too will enjoy it. I got a sample of it. So here's a long hit by Charles, but it's going to curve, and it goes far. Dizzy Dean, this afternoon, was reading telegrams from all over the country, every state in the union. He was talking about a ski up there down in Tennessee, a gypsy camp someplace down south. And mentioning all these people, well, fortunately, the game was on TV and you could see what was happening. But you know, he's got a big following and does a good job for the sponsors. So, and of course, he murders the King's English. And I think that he does that on purpose. I can remember one time when Judge Landis listened to him and they wanted to put Dean on a World Series, and the judge's quick answer was, "There are too many ignorant kids in America already." But
I was listening this afternoon, and I listened to the whole game, 9 innings, and I really got a kick out of him because in his way he's amusing, and he adds a lot to the ball game. And while he uses all this sort of English, it's like this is different from, I think, our English, as Casey Stengel's English is. At Stengelese. Well, Dean's got a language all of his own, too. But I sometimes think that he does that on purpose. He and I were at the palace together one time for a week, and we helped to kill vaudeville. I really, really had a picnic with this guy. Here is a swing and a foul. He's a real chump at cards, and his wife is watching all the time when he's around anybody that has any sort of a reputation as a card player. She really watches him like a hawk. She caught us one time out in California playing up in Andy Lotcho's room. Here's a swing and a foul. One out. We were at the Biltmore Hotel. We were out there in training one year. I was doing a cup game at that time. He's really quite a character, but he makes the game very, very interesting. And a swing and a line drive hit in the right center field. They go for two. He's around first. There he goes. Oh, he's going to hold up now. He put those brakes down in a hurry. Charles took a good look and saw that that play, if he kept on going, was going to be very close. And he went back to first base. Stepping into the batter's box. Jerry Lumpy, originally out of the Yankee organization. Swing at a double play ball. The clock. Over to second out. Back over to first out. That's number four. That is the fourth twin killing, and it retires the side. So the White Sox are backing up Bizarre here, and he's got that sinker working now, and the boys are hitting that ball into the dirt. And there was a fast double play. Nellie Fox to Aparicio, who fired it to Cunningham.
Now let's feature another compatriot of Bob Elson in the booth, Red Rush. The date, August 8th, 1967. The White Sox are playing at Detroit. Let's tune in to the 10th inning.
The runner's on at first and at second, and that'll bring on the guy that sent this game into extra innings anyway, Al Kaline. Light to the waist. Here's the pitch to Kaline. A swing, a base hit into the field. Here comes Barry in with the ball. He's going to make the play of the plate. Here comes the runner. He's going to be out by a mile, and he is out of there. Tagged beautifully by Martin. What a tag. Tagged him right across the waist. He tried to knock the ball out of his hands, but he couldn't do it, as Martin was not going to be deprived of that put out. And what a great throw by Ken Barry from left field, Bob.
Barry made a great throw. It was right on the line, right into Martin's hands. And Martin put the real squeeze on that baseball in his glove, and he hit that base runner coming in and held that ball for sure, so that the runner was out at the plate. It's a hit, by the way, of course, for Kaline. It was a very hard hit, low line drive into left field, and Barry made a fabulous game-saving throw to nail the runner at the plate. So now Eddie Stanky has come out to talk to Wilhelm again, and he's got problems here. There are runners at second and third. Now, Wilhelm's stuff is a lot harder to hit with that jumping beam for these kind of hitters that try to slug that ball like Horton, but also a ball might escape, and that's what Eddie's talking out there now about, Red, I'm sure.
Bat off of Hoyt Wilhelm. Wilhelm working out of a stretch. Here comes the pitch. And it gets away from Martin. Martin goes to the plate. He scores. The Tigers win the ball game. One pitch to Willie Horton, right down the middle. And it got away from J.C. Martin. And coming in to score was McCollum. To win the ball game for the Detroit Tigers by a score of 2-1. Man, you talk about excitement, it really was. It goes as a pass ball that scored the winning run. So in the inning, one run on two hits, one man left the board. And that's the end of the game, the final score. The Detroit Tigers 2, the Chicago White Sox 1.
The California Angels 5, the Chicago White Sox 4. October 1st, 1970. A 13-inning game in which the Angels came from behind in the bottom of the 13th to score twice and win 5-4. Bob Elson and Red Rush were doing the broadcast back home to the White Sox fans from Anaheim Stadium. The significance? Obviously, Bob Elson had a lot of last games of the season, but this happened to be the last game he would ever do for his beloved Chicago White Sox. Let's listen to highlights, which include the final portion of the game.
We're going into the ninth inning here, and the last chance for the White Sox, who are trailing 3-0. The leadoff batter will be McKinney, then Morales, and then Brinkman. Eddie Fisher is on the mound. California 3-10-2. The White Sox 0-5-3. So it is now or never in the final game of the year. Fisher set again. Swing and a high fly deep left field. This ball is really tagged. It's gone. A three-run home run. How do you like that? Wow, how sweet it is. Look at Walter go around the bag. Walter Williams. Third home run of the year to keep this ball game alive. Hit it off of Eddie Fisher. And the White Sox is celebrating like they were going into the playoffs. But that's baseball. So come on, Big John, tag one here.
Somebody better, Bob, or we're going to blow our plane.
Into the windup and the pitch swing, and there's a drive in left center field. The center fielder racing over grabs that ball. Ball on the fly. Well, that's one out here now.
And it's going to bring up Bill. Come on, Bill. This would be a great spot to wind it up with another home run.
That ball over the 375-foot marker. Here he comes down the line and over the plate. The White Sox have gone in front 4-3, and they lead for the first time tonight.
Get that plane ready, Bob.
Boy, that was some kind of a poke. Some battle out here in California for a game that has no meaning except that the players of both sides would like to end the season on a winning note. And that's the way it should be. Two-strike count for Cowan. Ball is low. 1-2.
Big lefty is set again, and the pitch.
Swing and a smash, clear ball, down the third base line. Walter makes a dive for the ball. Here's the turning run around the third. He's coming to the plate. Here's the throw. He is safe at the plate as Brinkman dropped the ball. The batter's going to third. He's safe. All Brinkman had to do was to hold on to the ball, and he would have been out at the plate by some kind of a margin.
Ball game is tied at 4-4, one out, a man on.
on third, as they had Mickey Rivers, the new flash from the Texas League, was going to be out by about 6 feet. McKinney took the ball from Williams and got that ball into the plate, and it was there in time. Rivers was called out, and then the umpire properly reversed himself when Brinkman dropped the ball. Now they're giving a walk here to Ruiz. An intentional pass with the winning run on third. The game already tied at 4-4. Well, there he goes, and here is Askew coming up. An intentional pass. Well, we've seen 8 runs. We've seen 22 hits. We have seen 6 errors. And the pitcher asks for a new ball. Strike 2 count. Here it is. Runner going. Here's a high fly. The game is over. Deep right field, and California wins. 5-4. Boy, he really tagged that ball to deep right field. And it just scored as a base hit, but that is the winning blow of the ball game. So Mel Queen came through with that long drive and gets credit for a hit. So that's the end of the ball game. That's the end of the baseball season. We want to thank all of you for listening. Hope you have a nice winter and stay healthy. That's the end of the ball game. The final score, California 5, the White Sox 4.
The St. Louis Cardinals were in Chicago on April 19, 1979, and Jack Buck took that opportunity to talk with Bob Elson.
It's good to see you, Bob Elson. How you doing?
Well, it's mighty good to see you, Jack. I feel fine. It's nice to be out here at the ballpark again. That's where I started in 1930. And they had a great ball club here in those days. You remember the Stevenson years and Kyler and those kind of people.
And when did you put it down after starting in those 1930s?
Well, actually, from 1930 until almost 1970.
40 years of baseball announcing from Bob Elson in a high-caliber baseball announcing. He was and still is the toast of the town here in this Chicago city. Keith Hernandez leads it off, swings and fouls it out of play. He's quickly in the hole with a strike 2 count.
People don't realize, I'm sure they don't, you don't either, I really got started in St. Louis.
Isn't that right?
I won a radio announcer's contest.
Here's a shot to short, a big hop to DeJesus. His throw is close through. He beat it out. Hernandez beat it out, and that causes the Cubs to argue.
Well, that was a startling call down there.
I kind of think the umpire was right, but I don't think anybody expected him to make the call that he did. Do you want an announcing contest?
Well, I was visiting Willie Hoppe, and I was staying at the Chase Hotel, the world-famous billiard player, and they had a radio announcer contest, and I'd never been in a radio station in my life, but station on top of the Chase.
KWK, was it?
KWK. Yes. Tom Convey was the owner of the station. After 2 or 3 days and all kinds of competition, including on the air and visiting prominent St. Louis people, being judged by them, I won the contest, but I lived in Chicago and I had no intention of staying in St. Louis, so they gave it to the runner-up. St. Louis has always been a favorite city of mine.
We're visiting with Bob Elson. Ted Simmons is at the plate. Hits the ball hard and foul past first base to make the count 1-1. Hernandez is on with a leadoff single here in the fourth. The Cardinals are trailing by the score of 2-1. Bob Elson, you did both the Cubs and the White Sox.
Yes, in 1930, we had 5 stations all doing the same game. We did the Cubs at home and then the Sox at home.
5 different broadcasters?
5 different broadcasters, 5 different stations. I was on GN, Hal Patton was on Q, Pat Flanagan was on BBM, Johnny O'Hara was on IND, and Jimmy Dudley was on WENR. There were no soap operas. The ladies had nothing to listen to.
Hernandez takes the lead. Lamp brings it into Simmons and swinging a foul back. I guess you're all making a quarter of a million.
No, we weren't, and we didn't... We didn't make that much. We didn't have to pay the Cubs any rights fees, and we paid the White Sox $10,000. And that went on until, well, it went on for almost 13 years. No road games, all home games of both teams.
Simmons waits for a 2-2 pitch from Lamp. Jumps back from ball three. Did you do the ticker tape games?
Yes, I did the ticker tape games, and that was work. You know, doing a doubleheader looking at the wall, and with that crowd record going.
You had to have some imagination. Here is the pitch with the runner going, a swing and a high fly ball into left. Might be troublesome for Kingman. It's curving foul, and it drops foul out of play. Still 3-2 on Keith Hernandez. Bob Elson, you won't mind if I say that I listened to you as a teenager in Cleveland. I listened to your broadcasts, notably of the night games, of course, and then I listened to Pittsburgh, and I'd listen to the Cleveland announcer, your old friend Jack Graney.
Yeah.
And I'd listen to baseball from Havana, Cuba.
Ike Tyson, used to pick him up.
Ike Tyson in Detroit, and Harry Heilman. And
Harry Heilman.
My upbringing in the game of baseball.
Well, that's nice.
You don't mind my saying that?
I'd like to think that your fine work that you do is a reflection on listening to me.
And the bad work is not. 3-2 the count to Simmons. Hernandez has singled to start here the fourth inning. Cardinals trailing 2-1. Hernandez leads away, runs, a swing and a high fly ball and a short right hit by Simmons will be caught by Bobby Mercer. He comes in and has it for the out. Hernandez back to first. I'm starting to broadcast like you. That's the way he used to do it. A high fly ball to right.
You know, Jack, there's so many unpredictables in baseball this year that attendance-wise, I think baseball is going to break all records.
It sure is a different game now in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Well, it is, and there's no cinch anyplace. I think Milwaukee's got a good shot to beat out the New York Yankees, and the Dodgers are going to miss Tommy John. They're no cinch anymore.
There goes Hernandez again, a swing and another foul by Simmons, and the count remains 3-2. What are your activities these days, Bob Elson?
Well, I work for two companies. I'm sports director of Northwest Federal Savings and Loan here. And I work for a paper company, Acme Paper. So I'm busy, and I do a radio show, a half-hour show with a sports celebrity every Sunday, 11:30 to 12. And I do a lot of commercials for different companies, and I see as much baseball as I possibly can.
How old are you now?
75.
Yeah, that's great. You look perky. Bob Elson is with us here in the booth. Hernandez is at first. Simmons at the plate. The runner not going, and another foul by Simmons. And the count stays the same. We have one out here, or nobody out here in the... There is one out, and the batter is Dane Orridge as Simmons is glide out. And Hernandez is still on at first base, and now a two-strike count on Orridge, who grounded out his first time up. Cubs got a run in the second. Cardinals tied it in the third, and the Cubs have the lead right now. Orridge is in the hole. And Dennis Lamp steps off the rubber. Gets the sign again from Barry Foote. A lead by the runner, and the pitch is made. And it's a ball downstairs. Ball one, 1-2. You've had a lot of fine young announcers work with you, Bob Elson.
Yes, I have. One now with Pittsburgh, Milo Hamilton. Don Wells worked with me for many, many years. He did the California games for 7 or 8 years. They look to me like they could be a winner this year.
California
the addition
ball
of Rod Carew has added a great deal to that ball club. Carew is a good influence on average hitters, and when they watch him and what he can do every day, he's got to make better ball players out of everybody on the team. I think that was a great investment on the part of Gene Autry.
Dane Orridge is at the plate here as the Cardinals bat in the fourth, one on, one out. Lamp the right-hander pitches, the runner going, a swing and a foul by Orridge. Did you ever write a book, Bob?
No, but I've been thinking about it. I have a lot of wonderful pictures of old players that played here, like Hack Wilson and Rick Stevenson, who was one of the greatest right-hand hitters I ever saw. Roger Hornsby was here. He probably was the best right-hand hitter I ever saw. He hit over 400 with a dead ball twice. And some great shots with Williams, probably the best left-hand hitter I ever saw.
Here's another pitch with a runner going. A pitch outside the throw. He is safe. The ball goes into center field. Hernandez goes on to third base. He's there with a tying run with one man out and a 3-2 count on Orridge right now. A stolen base for Hernandez. An error charge to the catcher. The runner is at third with one out. high on that day in August in Cooperstown.
No, I don't think so. I'm really honored by it. I've spent my life in baseball. I owe a lot to baseball. Known all those greats from back, Lou Gehrig, and worked his way through Columbia washing dishes, one of the greatest players I ever saw. I introduced him to his wife. The motion picture, the Lou Gehrig story, is a fallacy.
Here's the pitch, swung on, hit the second. The runner trying to score. The throw home, he's through. He beats the tag of Barry Foote and ties the game 2-2.
Safe, all right.
Foote couldn't block the plate, and Hernandez got by him on the throw home from Sizemore. Orge is on a fielder's choice with a run batted in. The play went 4-2, and Hernandez slid around the tag to tie this game 2-2 in the fourth inning. Foote jumping up and down. I don't know if he's angry at himself, Bob, or angry at the umpire.
Well, I thought he was safe, and we have a very good look at it here in this our position in this booth. But the business of arguing in those close plays, that's part of the game. And the manager, who's got the worst seat in the ballpark, Herman Franks, he can't see anything from that dugout. He comes out to argue, and that naturally to back up his catcher. But the runner looks safe to me.
Herman Franks is out of the dugout to argue. Sizemore fielded the ground ball by Orge, threw home to the catcher, Barry Foote. Hernandez slid around him, got the plate, was called safe, and we have a tie game, 2-2 here in the fourth inning, and Tony Scott is
back. I think the mistake that Foote made there was he was waiting for the runner to slide. Had he stepped up about a foot, he never would have gotten in there.
He didn't knock him off the plate in all probability. The batter is Tony Scott. Tapped out his first time up. The pitch to Tony, swung on, hit up the middle. That's a base hit. For Scott, his 17th hit of the year. Center fielder fumbles the ball, but staying at second base is Dane Orge. Well, it was fun to see Bob Elson here at the ballpark before the game, and knowing that he was going to Baseball's Hall of Fame in Cooperstown in August, I asked him to stop by and visit with us. And, Bob, I'll be thrilled for you.
It's been a real pleasure, and I expect one of these days, based on the fine work you've done over so many years, that honor will come to you, and I sincerely hope it does.
Well,
I hope I'm around to see it.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Jack, very much.
Right again, Bob Elson. Right again. Two Hall of Fame broadcasters, Jack Buck and Bob Elson, conversing in the Cardinal booth in 1979. We didn't have to bring you that entire interview. We could have cut it short after 2 or 3 minutes and given you just the flavor of Bob Elson talking again in 1979. But the conversation to us was a very interesting one and very revealing. Thus, we let you hear it all. Now, we're going to end as we all sit back and listen to Bob Elson just do some play-by-play. We're going back to June 1st, 1953. Sit back and enjoy as the White Sox are playing at New York.
The right-hander, Yul Botwell. Big tall spring beam. When he left the gate out there, way out in right center, it looked a little bit like Kozaba, who was also a tall, slender fellow, but it's Yul Botwell, who's coming in here and out of fire. As Junior Stevens, Sox have the bases loaded, a hit would tie the score. Two out and the bases loaded in the ninth inning. Is a thriller again at New York with the White Sox battling these guys all the way down to the wire. Yancey is going out. Games. He started two. He has 2 wins and no losses. He's pitched 15 innings, given up 6 runs, 4 of them earned, 13 hits at 7 strikeouts, and has given up 7 bases on board. Blackwell, former National Leaguer, umpire in the All-Star game at Chicago a few years ago at Comiskey Park. Paul Springbean used to be with the Cincinnati Reds. He's getting in his practice throws. And Junior Stevens. Where's Junior? Looks like they're going to take him out now for a pinch hitter. Tommy Byrne is going to bat for Stevens against his old teammates, the Yankees. Tommy Byrne is coming up to bat now to swing for Stevens with the bases loaded, and just a base hit will tie the score. Here's the announcement on Byrne. Number 27 in the back of his gray uniform, Tommy Byrne, batting here at New York, and the bases loaded as the White Sox battle these Yankees, trailing 3-1. Here's a ball. He almost hit him. And it's a ball two and a strike one count on Byrne. This guy hit one in the City Series at Chicago against the Cubs and probably is still going. He can hit that ball when he gets a hold of it. So it's come on Tommy now at Yankee Stadium as Jewel Blackwell gets set again. Fight the curveball. 2-2. Ball two and strike two for Tommy Byrne. Blackwell takes his cap off, mops his forehead with his left sleeve. Getting ready as a 2-2 count on Byrne. The bases are loaded. There are two out here in the ninth. Here's a swing, and there goes the drive. Way back, it's a home run. A grand slam. A White Owl wallop. A box of White Owl cigars. Tommy Byrne just hit a grand slam homer at New York. Hit a grand slam homer at New York. The entire Sox team is out in the field to greet him. Tommy Byrne just hit a grand slam homer at New York. I hope you can hear me over this din at Yankee Stadium. What a drive way back into the lower stand. Byrne has just homered. and the White Sox have scored 5 runs in the ninth. Here's Lawler, and there's a ball low. Ewell Blackwell whips in a sidearm curveball, and the last time we saw it, it was way up in the right field stand. A grand slam home run. Here's Lawler, a ball, it's low. White Sox have come off the floor again. Boy, they're giving these 3 Yorkers an eyeful, I want to tell you. Here's the pitch, and it's a ball. Cleveland came in here and rolled over and played dead in 2 ball games, and all the writers have been writing about the White Sox and their dash and spirit and never give up. Burns just hit a homer with the bases loaded for the Sox with 2 outs. Price gets in around his knees. Well, Tommy has earned his pay for the year with that drive into the right field stand. Ball 3 and strike 1 to Lawler. Ball 4. He walks. That's all for Blackwell. Mariscal hit a grand slammer against the Boston Red Sox. And now Burns hits a pinch grand slammer against the mighty Yankees in Yankee City. Boy, and I want to tell you, when he kicked that ball, I almost fell off the chair here. You could see right away that it was going all the way, way up into the right field stand. So Tommy said hello to his own teammates here in great fashion. I think that drive almost cured my laryngitis. Well, it's a great thrill anyway, and especially when it happens against this powerful team. These White Sox, boy, they just never quit. Here is Chico Carrascal now to face Quezada. Bob Quezada has no wins or losses. He's appeared in 3 games as a called strike. He's pitched 3 innings and given up no runs or hits. Carrascal didn't like that. You wouldn't either unless you had a 9-iron in your hand. Looked like it was going to hit him in the foot. Chico is arguing. Now he's set. There's a strike in around the knee. That was a good one. 2 strikes on Carrascal, left-hander Bob Quezada. White Sox are leading 5-3. 5 runs, 5 hits, no errors. 3 runs, 9 hits, 1 error for New York. And that's a blast by Tommy Burns. Way back into the right field stand. The bases were loaded. Here's a swing and a miss, and a twisting curveball, and he stuck it up. That's 5 runs, 5 hits, no errors. The Yankees 3 runs, 10 hits, and 1 error. The winning pitcher was Louie Aloma, and the loser, Vic Red. So this is Bob Elson saying goodbye from Yankee Stadium in New York. The White Sox tonight are a half a game out of the American League lead and playing really wonderful.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed that, and I'm glad you stuck around to the end. And I just wanted to credit those audio sources. That all the credits are in the show notes, as well as a link to all the audio libraries. As a quick reminder, the best way to stay connected with us is just to sign up for the daily newsletter. The daily newsletter has trivia, quotes, link to today's podcast, history, and much, much more. Everything is in the show notes. Just click away and enjoy. And I hope to see you at a ballpark real soon.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by ClassicBaseballBroadcasts.com, your one-stop destination for thousands of authentic, vintage radio game broadcasts, interviews and highlights, Red Barber, Mel Allen, Vin Scully, Ernie Harwell, Kurt Godey, are just a few of the Ford Frick Award-winning voices. There are hundreds more that will bring back childhood memories from back in the day when the game was always on. From the crack of the bat to the roar of the crowd. Relive the moments that made Baseball America's favorite pastime. Get started for free and step back in time listening to baseball's greatest moments.